Good morning, everybody. It's so nice to be back. It's so nice to see you back. We've had a little break for Tishrei. It's a new month, Chodesh Tov. It's a new year, Shana Tova. We haven't met since Elul. So, first of all, it's great to see people here live. If anybody is here on Zoom, thank you for coming on Zoom too. We appreciate you coming on Zoom. I would love to encourage as many people who are watching. I'm speaking to the converted, as it were, here. But I'd like to encourage people to come live if they can. It would be nice to start building up the numbers again to where we were, or at least closer to where we were pre-COVID. Blia and Hara, looks like things maybe are calming down a bit. You never know. But right now, so the OU Israel Center is very particular about getting people to wear masks, etc. And I'm assuming that most people are triple vaccinated. If not, please get that soon, if you can. And therefore, I would encourage people to come. I suspect that with human nature, the reason many people are not coming is because they've fallen out of the habit of coming in some cases. And therefore, I encourage you, get out, come, get some fresh air, and join us at the OU Israel Center. That would be amazing. So let me start off with some sponsorships. The Shirim for the 2021 academic year have been, well, the whole calendar year actually, have been sponsored anonymously in the merit of an aliyah for the neshamas of Maaseh ben Yisrael, Aaron ben Menachem Lev, and Eliana Bas Yaakov. Additionally, this particular live share, and we're happy to have sponsorship for the live share, is sponsored in loving memory of Dr. I.M. Brower, Zatzal of Chicago, Le'ilu Nishmas Yitzhak Moshe ben Gedaliahu, whose yotzeit is today, the 30th of Tishrei, and that has been sponsored by his family. We really appreciate that very much. Okay. Yes, Miriam is here, and therefore we must, and not just because Miriam is here, because the Shir is here, please turn off your phones, put them on mute, so that we, every week I say this, and every week we have a little interlude, but please put your phone on mute. A couple of housekeeping matters just before we get into the Shir. First of all, we are, it seems, back in the season of traveling for recruiting. As you might know, I run a midrasha, I run a seminary, and last year we did everything on Zoom, which actually worked just fine, and therefore we all asked ourselves, why can't we just do this year, rather than schlep around the world paying hundreds of thousands of dollars? But that's not how it's going to be, it seems, and therefore I expect to be away in November for a few weeks, and possibly in December, but we will give you notice of that. October so far looks fine, and therefore I will let you know when I'm not going to be here. There will, of course, be Shiurim in this slot when I'm not here. It'll be someone else, and I'm sure they'll be even better and more interesting, but whatever, it'll be someone different. So that's going to be in November. Who knows, that could change as well. So I don't plan more than 2 or 3 days ahead now. I've stopped writing anything in pen on my diary at all. It's only pencil, and I rub everything out. Okay, now, I think we will very much enjoy today. Those of you who are observant Jews will have noticed on my sheet that there is something different that you've never seen before. What is that? It says Series 2. What does Series 2 mean? So Series 2 means as follows. As you know, for the last 5.5 years, we have been working through different topics. We got to around number 232, something like that. I kept telling you there had to come a time when we went back to the beginning again. And I have decided, because of various factors, at least this semester, when I'm running around and traveling a lot on and off, etc., that we will go back to the very beginning. I would say that probably there may be one or two people who were here right at the very beginning. We're going back 5.5 years, but probably not many. But even if there are, and even if they have very long memories, and even if they're thinking, oh gosh, I remember that shir word for word, he gave it in 2016, I'm pleased to tell you that I've actually changed the sheet significantly, and I plan to upgrade and improve and add extra sources. So other than that, I'm sure everybody will hopefully enjoy it. Those people who weren't here 5.5 years ago, a couple of you, probably Jerry and maybe Trevor, gave the shir about 15 years ago at Nair on Shabbos afternoon. So if you were there that week, and if you remember, then I apologize, you've heard this before. But again, I've added a whole bunch of sources. I've added a whole bunch of sources, and therefore it's actually quite different, and maybe I'm different, so we'll do what we can. I'd like to look at the issue of bat mitzvah. Okay, bat mitzvah is a relatively modern phenomenon, and it actually can be used as a test case for how we react to certain kinds of changes in minhag, maybe you might even say masorah, which are not strictly speaking halakhically prohibited. We talked about this a little bit before. There are different kinds of change that people suggest or propose in the halakhic system. Some of them are just completely off the table. If someone wants to scrap a mitzvah in the Torah or to make a new mitzvah in the Torah, let's put Shabbos on Thursday, whatever it is, there's nothing to talk about until HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets us back again at Har Sinai, or maybe we could do it in Tinek, or maybe we can do it in Yerushalayim, whatever. There's not going to be any discussion of whether Torah changes. And by the way, there is in Sefer HaIkrim of Rav Yosef Albo, he has a whole analysis of could there be another Har Sinai and could we get a new Torah in that way? Not getting into that now, it's not very practical for today at least. And short of maybe whether witches will change when Mashiach comes, which we talked about, so Torah mitzvahs, we're never going to change. Rabbinic mitzvahs, there is nothing really to talk about until the Sanhedrin comes. If there's a new Sanhedrin, which there could be, there's nothing stopping us from making a Sanhedrin other than our own political failure to get our act together and make a Sanhedrin. We don't need Mashiach for a Sanhedrin, we don't need a Beis HaMikdash. When we get a new Sanhedrin, so then we can start opening up the Talmud and asking, do you feel you want to change this or do you want to change that? So that's, but that's again, not for now. Then there are things which we follow a certain, halachas, we follow a certain path in the Masorah, but there are minority opinions out there. They're there, they're on the books, but we don't follow them and we want to shift to a minority opinion because we feel that it's time to change the zerem of halacha. This is a very brief overview. So there, maybe there are opportunities to change, but that requires, in most cases, the haskama, the agreement and the approval of the gedolei hapsak, the people who are responsible for the halachic system, to actually move the halachic train onto a different set of tracks. I'll give you an example. Let's say we want to reverse the position halachically and encourage women to wear tefillin. For the last 1,000 years, there's been pretty much a consensus that women are discouraged from wearing tefillin. But there are minority opinions. There are all sorts of things out there that should we or should we not change that? That's not for your local rabbi to decide. That's for people at the top of the tree, if you like, to work out. One example which we did change was teaching women Torah. It was very clear from almost all sources that we do not teach women Torah Shebal Peh, and maybe not even Torah Shebichtav. It says in the Shulchan Aruch, you cannot teach a girl, a woman, Torah Shebal Peh. It's going to be disastrous. And better not even Torah Shebichtav. That changed about 100 years ago. How it changed, who changed it, that's not for today. But there are things where there is nothing wrong with it. Halakhically, there's absolutely nothing really against it. The question is, we never did this before. We never thought of this before. No one ever suggested this before. When, under what circumstances do we say, okay, well, if it ain't wrong, must be right. You know, if the Torah doesn't say something's prohibited, the assumption is it's permitted. Or do we say, no, we're very little c conservative people. We don't like changes, certainly not radical changes. In our experience, we've had a negative history when people try to radically change things. We won't do it because it's new. Famously, the phrase of the Chatam Sofer, Chadosh Osam in HaTorah, I don't care if it's prohibited or permitted. If it's new, it's not acceptable. How are we going to look at bat mitzvah? We're going to look at that together for the next 50 minutes. Hopefully you'll see some different approaches, which I think will be very informative. Let's just give a little bit of background. Why is there such a thing as bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah at all? So bar mitzvah is already mentioned in Pirkei Avos, number one. So we have a whole list of ages here of different people that come to maturity, different stages. Hu haya oimer ben chamesh shanim lemikra, 5 years old, you can start teaching a child chumash. It's really talking about boys, as you'll see. Ben eser lemishnah, a 10-year-old should start learning mishnah, Torah Shebal Peh. Ben shloish esrei lemitzvot, 13, you start being obligated in mitzvot. Ben chamesh yisrael le'talmud, 15 already, you can start learning Talmud. You have a mind which is mature enough for that. Ben shmona yisrael le'chuppah, 18 years old already. What's wrong with you? Why are you not married? Get married. Ben esrim lirdof. And it continues. I haven't done the older ones because I'm not focusing on those today. Are 20 years old to chase. Well, who are we chasing when they're 20? We'll see in a few minutes. So you see there a 13-year-old is obligated in mitzvot.
13-year-old boy. How do we know? Where do we get this idea from? Rashi brings two ideas. Number two. First of all, Rashi on Pirkei Avos quotes a pasuk, a Torah derivation. Dichsiv, ish o isha ki yasu mikol chatois ha'adam. The responsibility for sin is an ish or an isha. You have to be a man or a woman. Unless you're an ish or isha, you're not reliable for the mitzvah. The einu kroi ish, and you're only called a man, says Rashi, achihu ben yud gimel, when you're 13. How do we know? Kedashkechan hasen, we see over there, this is based on a midrash, in Bereshis Rabbah, v'yikhu shnei b'nei Yaakov, Shimon v'Levi, achei dina ish charba. Each of the brothers, Shimon and Levi, are called an ish. They take their sword, v'az, and at that point, haya Levi ben shlosh yisrei shana. Levi was a 13-year-old boy, and he went and rampaged through Shechem. There's some pretty tough 13-year-olds out there, okay? Ukechetachshav beishanim, and Rashi says when you count for the 2 years, she'asa Yaakov bet El, which Yaakov spent in bet El, then it turns out if you do the maths, then Levi at least is 13. Shimon is a little bit older. So that's it. When you're 13, you're called an ish. Alternatively, Rashi brings, and this is another nusach that Rashi has here, number three, ben shlosh yisrael mitzvahs. Demisha hevi shtei saros balichlal mitzvahs doraisa halacha lemoshe misina. He says, alternatively, this is not derived from a source in the verses. This is like, as we'll see soon, many shiurim, amounts, kazayis, kebetzer, and all of this, halacha lemoshe misina. This is received under the oral law all the way from the beginning. 13 is the age of maturity for boys. And he says, critically, and we'll see, just spend just a minute or two on this, because many people don't know this, also that the child has to have reached puberty. He has to have actually produced two adult hairs, and we'll see, we don't go checking people to see if they've reached puberty. We'll see how that works halakhically. Do you want the air on, by the way? I can see people already beginning to doze, and the shir is not yet boring. So, Trevor, would you mind if you could ask them to put on some air? It may be October, but it's still hot. Okay, fine. What's going on here? Let's carry on. V'shiro chachamim, the rabbis assessed, havashtei saros, l'shosh yisrei shana, most boys reach maturity, puberty, when they hit around 13. And by the way, that's even earlier today. If that were true in classical times, the age of maturity, sexual maturity, has become earlier and earlier because of nutrition and all sorts of things like that. L'fikach machnisin esolikia mitzvahs, therefore that's the age that he keeps mitzvahs. Well, the oisez man ve'elech mistama machzikinan lei b'shtei saros. He has a chazaka. A boy age 13 has a chazaka, a halachic presumption that he's reached maturity. Kedin roiv tinoikas, because most young men reach maturity at that age, produce these two hairs. Aval, hechad yadina leba biru da akasi loy maisi beisaras, when we can see there's something unusual about this young man. He's not reaching puberty, he's not showing any signs of maturity there. L'shosh yisrei, ein anizkak lemitzvahs, then they're not really on a Torah level, they're not obligated in mitzvahs min ha-Torah. Ela b'chinuch midrabbanon ba'alma d'mechanchile. But he's obligated in chinuch, because he's still halachically, at least min ha-Torah, a child. How long does that go on for? We'll see. By the way, just to mention, there's a major debate in the poskim. Everyone knows that there's a rabbinic obligation to be machanech a child, to educate a child, from whatever age that education starts. Is that an obligation on the parents or others, but the child is just like, has no obligations because he's a child or she's a child? Or is that an obligation on the child? Do we say the child, this 11-year-old, is chayav midrabbanan to do this, to bench? Or do we say the child's not chayav at all, but the parent has to teach them? Why do I care? There are very significant nafkaminas. There are big differences. For example, let's say there's an adult who is only obligated midrabbanan to bench, because they only had a little bit of food. You're only obligated on a Torah level, v'achalta v'savata uvirachta, when you're full. So you say, well, I only had a little bit of bread. I just have a rabbinic obligation to bench. Okay, you're a 9-year-old. You also have a rabbinic obligation to bench. Bench for me. Only if the child has the obligation can we say that works. But if the child is devoid of obligations, their parents, then the child can't do anything. Okay, that's not for now. But this young man who is not maturing has a rabbinic obligation. It doesn't matter whether he's 6, 10, 15. If he's not mature, then he's not mature. And on a Torah level, we need to wait at esrim until he's 20. Interesting. Shema Yavish De Saris. Maybe he's going to mature, maybe he's not. The Im Higila Esrim, if he reaches 20, Veloy Hevi, and he hasn't matured sexually by that time, Galia Nafshi De Saris. We can tell that this person is never going to mature. Nevach, there's some kind of maybe a hormonal problem going on. This is a Saris. A Saris literally means like a eunuch, but it's here. This is the point is that this person will never become an adult, sexually mature. De Saris Einlush De Saris, and he'll never grow those hairs. V'chayv b'chol mitzvahs, and once he reaches 20, we say, okay, this is as mature as you're ever going to be. You're chayv in all mitzvahs now that you're 20, and you are a regular adult. So b'chol einshim shebatara, and all responsibility. V'haynu de katani lekamei ben esrim lirudof, and that's why it says that a 20-year-old, we go chasing him. Chasing him for what? Because once a boy reaches 20, the Beis Din will then chase after him, and give him Malkus or whatever, the Rabbanon, to give him Musa, to give him direction. So that's what that means in Pirkei Avos. At 20, whether you're mature or not, you've reached the age. Loishana Hevi, doesn't matter whether he has the hairs, Loishana Loihevi. Fine. Umi Esrim Va'elich, Chashiv Leikra, Kegavra. At 20, the Posuk itself says you're a man, Gavra Ba'almak, a regular man, Dixiv, Mibain Esrim Shana Va'mala, which is talking about there in Shmot, the counting of the Jewish people. Fine. There's an interesting little part here which is not relevant specifically to Bat Mitzvah, but we've never really spoken about it before, and therefore I thought I'd throw that in. When is that relevant? So the Mishnah Brura brings an interesting halacha in number 4. Can your kid make kiddush for you? On Shabbos, Friday night. Says the Mishnah Brura, Uposhet the cotton ain't a mitzvah yisaisha. You have a little boy age 10. He knows kiddush val peh, clever little boy. And the mother's saying, I don't really know kiddush. Will you make kiddush for me? Your dad's not home. So can the 10-year-old make kiddush for his mother? He says, no, of course not. How can he make kiddush? Dolei asi de rabbonon. So the child is obligated, let's say, the rabbonon. The mafik doraisa, he can make kiddush for the woman who is obligated on a Torah level. Men and women have the same obligation for kiddush, identical, once they're grown-ups. So this kid, of course, can't be motzi to the woman. Let's say it's a 13-year-old, he has bar mitzvah last week. By Yud Gimel Shana. Chayshina, we're going to be worried. Shema loy hevish de saras. I don't know if this bar mitzvah boy is a real man. Okay, he leaned in shul, he's been bar mitzvah. I don't know, for sure. We'll talk about why he can learn in a second. When it comes to Torah laws, we don't rely on this chazaka. Only rabbinic laws. Usually with rabbinic laws, he's reached the years. He's grown the hairs, etc. Hachismali zikno, and if we see that he's got a beard already, okay, so then I can see that he's already grown up, etc. Oh, we see, I knew there'd be one. Okay, there we are. Okay, fine, everybody, there'll be no more. So what should a woman do if she has a small child with her? She should make kiddush for herself. If she doesn't know how, lekadesh, ba'atzma herself, tome imo mila b'mila. Then he should just read the word and she should repeat it. Baruch, Baruch, Ata, Ata. Remember, many women were illiterate up until modern times. Many men were illiterate as well. And so the woman says, I don't know Kiddush, I can't read it. So he shall repeat after the boy and she'll have in mind that she's making Kiddush. Fine. So there you have an interesting question. Your bar mitzvah boy or bat mitzvah girl says, oh, it was my bar mitzvah last week. I want to make Kiddush for the family now. So if that ever happens to you, there'll be like an uncomfortable silence when you'll say, actually, it's not that straightforward. Let's wait for a little bit. I'll give you another example. A bar mitzvah boy can lane in shul. Why? Because laning is a rabbinic institution on the community. We assume the boy has reached majority. We're not going to check. We know he's 13, so he can lane. But let's say the bar mitzvah is on Parshas Zachor. They'll never let the bar mitzvah boy lane. They'll never let the bar mitzvah boy lane because that's a mitzvah doraisa. So my son's bar mitzvah was Parshas Para, which is even a shaila of a doraisa. And the Rav said, no, he can lane the Parsha, but he can't lane Parshas Para. And he certainly couldn't lane Parshas Zohar. Are you going to say, well, let's check? So the answer is, I don't recommend that for many reasons. And it might actually cause you a problem because let's say you check and there's no signs of maturity, then you can't lane at all. Because we assumed for rabbinic laws that you probably reached maturity. But if we checked and found you hadn't, then we just cancelled your bar mitzvah. So it's best not to do those things. Fine. So Rashi, that's a little excursus, if you like, into that issue. Rashi, and here on top of page 2, the Rosh also says clearly in a tshuva, Shasha'alti, you asked a question, Me'ein lanu deben yud gimel shana v'yom echad hu bar onshin. How do we know that a 13-year-old is obligated in mitzvahs? Aval pachot mikein, but less than that law, how do we know? Says the Rosh in the 13th century. Da ki halacha lemoshe misinai hu. This is an oral law tradition from the very beginning, from Sinai. For hu bichlal shiurim chatzitzim u'mechitzin. Like the Gemara says, all shiurim, all mechitzin, the idea of mechitzes, chatzitzin, halachic interruptions in the mikveh, between your skin and the mikveh, etc. They're all halacha lemoshe misinai. Like we said, kazayis, kebetzah, etc. So whether bar mitzvah is derived from a posuk, from Levi, or whether it's halacha l'moshe m'sinai, that there is no debate on, it's 13. What about bat mitzvah? Who said that girls are earlier? So the Gemara takes it for granted that girls are earlier. Number 6. Bat shtei mesrei shana v'yom echad nedareha kayamim. Once a girl has reached 12 years, if she makes a nedel, it's valid, it's totally binding. Beniyud gimel shana, but a boy, it's only when he's 13, v'yom echad nedarav kayamim. Then his nedarim are binding. Well, why is a girl earlier? The Gemara says obvious. Kaidem as manazeh, earlier than those years, 12 for a girl, 13 for a boy. Afapi sha'amru yoidin anu l'shem min nidroi, midarnu. Even if they say, we know what we're doing, we know how a neder works, we don't listen to them, at least on a Torah level, ein nidrei hem neder. Rashi says, the ketanim hem. Before a girl is 12, she's a ketana. How do we know? Because when God made Chava, last week's parsha, number 7, Vayiven Hashem Elokim et Hatzela, God builds, it doesn't say he takes or he cuts, but he builds up the side from the word binyan of Adam to make into Chava, says the Gemara in Nida, number 8, the same Gemara continuation we saw in 6, Melamed Shenatan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bina Yesera Be'isha Yosema Be'ish. That a woman has Bina Yetera. The Vayiven is not only Binyan, it's also Bina. That women get this extra Bina, more than men. Unless you turn around and feel that women are superior to men, that's not the Ritva's pshat. The Ritva is not that women have greater Bina than men when they're adults, it's they get Bina earlier. Says the Ritva, Perush Shemmaheret Lahavin. So it could be a 50-year-old man and a 50-year-old woman. It depends on the individual. We can't assume she has more Bina than him. But as you can know from your own experience, a 13-year-old boy, you know, even a 16-year-old boy, frankly, even a 21-year-old boy, are often like small children. But when you're dealing with women, not only is there earlier physical maturity, but also emotional and psychological maturity, which is one of the reasons why I find personally I prefer to teach in 18-year-olds in the midrashah women rather than 18-year-old men, because I don't really want to teach in high school. And 18-year-old men, you have a room full of 14-year-olds usually. Where 18-year-old women, it depends on the day. But, you know, there's more chance. Fine. So it's either from the Pasuk Bina Yesera, Vayiven Esa Isha, or number 9, again, the Maril says, Be'isha Bas Gimel, all the different years of maturity of when a woman is 3, Bas Yud Aleph when she's 11, Bas Yud Beis when she's 12. I'm not going through all the implications. Kol Hani Hilchasa, they're all Haloch of Moshe Misina, Hilchasa Ninu, Kekol Shi'urim Doraisa. So whether it's from the Torah, whether it's from Chava, whether it's from Haloch of Moshe Misinai, then it's 12 and 13, everybody agrees. Now, what about celebrating a bar mitzvah? So we know that the boy reaches 13, he has a bar mitzvah. Or he is bar mitzvah. Bar mitzvah just means the son of a mitzvah. There's a big question as to why bar mitzvah is Aramaic, but bat mitzvah is Hebrew. So the truth is that the Gemara already uses the expression bat mitzvah, we'll see later on. But I think really the reason is because in Aramaic, the word for a daughter is a brat. So to call it a brat mitzvah, I think people are reluctant, even though it is accurate in many senses. For a 12-year-old, I think they prefer bat mitzvah. But we'll see, even in the early days when there was a lot of mockery of the bat mitzvah, many of the journals called it a brat mitzvah as a mockery as well. I don't think they were using the American session brat, the word brat, but whatever. Fine. So number 10, based on a Gemara Kiddushin. Amar Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef was blind, and he said, Mireish Havamina, I used to originally think, Manda Have Amali Halacha Rebbe Yehuda. If you can prove to me that Halacha is like Rebbe Yehuda, the Amma who says, Suma Potamana Mitzvahs, that a blind person is exempt from mitzvahs. Why would a blind person be exempt? Because they can't really interface with what's going on. We don't know if they really know what they're doing. So if you can prove to me that I'm exempt as a blind man, avitna yom tov the rabbanon, I'm going to make a kiddush. I'm going to make a yom tov for the rabbis. We're going to make a kiddush at shul. The haloi mifkidna bekidna, I'm not obligated because you've proved to me I'm not because I'm blind. The avitna, but I like doing the mitzvahs anyway. I volunteer. And as a volunteer, surely I'm on a higher level. Now he says, Hashdash the Shmaisa Lada Amar Rabbi Chanina. Now I've heard this statement from Rabbi Chanina, a new thing I never knew. Godl Matsuva Isa Yosim Mimisha'ina Matsuva Isa. Someone who is obligated is on a higher level. Even though that's a little counterintuitive. You would have thought if I volunteer for mitzvah, surely that's more commendable. Tosfos says no, because if you're obligated, you have a Yetzahara. God told me to do this, don't tell me what to do. So when you do it having been told, so that's a higher level. So now Adarabba. Or the contrary, man da amali da ain halachic Rabbi Yehuda. If you can prove that the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, i.e. that blind people are obligated in mitzvahs, avidna yuma tovah l'rabban, I'm going to make a kiddush. Basically, he wants to make a kiddush. He's going to make a kiddush either way. But now he wants to make a kiddush if you can prove to him that he is obligated. So says the Marashal, the Amshel Shlomo in number 11. I'm not going to read it inside. So you see that somebody makes a kiddush even when they just find out that they were obligated all along, but now they just know for sure that they are. So kal v'chaimer, all the more so, you would make a kiddush when you become obligated in mitzvahs. Because that's even greater than just finding out that you're obligated in mitzvahs. And the first four words, which I want to read here, are important. He says, therefore, sudat bar mitzvah she'osim ha'ashkenazim. This is in the 1600s, the bar mitzvah, the late 1500s, the bar mitzvah celebration, the suda, meaning no one's disagreeing that when you turn 13, you become obligated in mitzvahs for a boy. But the Ashkenazi make a suda, l'chaira ein l'chasudas mitzvah gedoyla mizah. And it goes on to prove what I just said, that since that person becomes obligated, this is a source of enormous simcha. Why only the Ashkenazim? What's that? Yitro? Oh, wait, the suda? Okay, good, fine, that's Midrashim, okay, whatever. So, why only Ashkenazim? Why didn't Sephardim have bar mitzvah celebrations? And again, we're talking about the 16th century. Nobody's having, chopped liver swans or whatever, or the kiddush. It's going to be pretty basic. So why don't the Sephardim do something? So I'll suggest a reason in a minute. The Magen Avraham comes along in number 12 and codifies this for Ashkenazim as halacha. Magen Avraham living in the 17th century. Shemitzvah al adam la'asoit su'uda. There is a mitzvah for a person to make a su'uda. B'yom shenaso b'no bar mitzvah. When his son becomes a bar mitzvah. And there were other minhagim, baruch shepatrani. The people say, thank God that I'm no longer obligated, or he's no longer obligated for my avarice, whatever. K'yom shenichlas l'chuppah, just like when he enters the chuppah. And maybe that's one of the reasons why the custom, at least in Israel, is to call the bar mitzvah boy a chatan. Chatan har bar mitzvah. No one in Chutz La'aretz I ever heard that before. But in Israel they do. Umash medahayinu biyom shenichlas l'shnat yudalet, when he enters into his 14th year. Meaning, you should do it on his birthday. That's a sudas mitzvah. The im hanar doirish, but if the kid also gives a drosha, which is the custom, have a sudas mitzvah afilu ha'inu b'yom, even if it's not on the birthday. The kid's giving a drosha. It's beautiful. So then you can make a sudas mitzvah even if it's after the bar mitzvah. So that became the minhag. Why? What changed, and why was it only Ashkenazim? So I don't know for sure. I've given you a reference in the footnotes to an academic article that I found, The Conceptual and Anthropological History of Bat Mitzvah, Two Lexical Paths and Two Jewish Identities. You can read that in your own time. It was actually, I found it quite interesting. So one of the things they suggested there is as follows. That in theory, in principle, a boy age, what are the two things that the boy does at bar mitzvah that marks the bar mitzvah? He puts on tefillin, and he leans from the Torah. Now, mi'ikah hadin, a cotton can lean from the Torah. You can have a 9-year-old leaning from the Torah. One of my rabbis said he once went to a Yemenite shul, and they called him up for an aliyah, covered to the rav, and they said, no, read. I mean, you get called up, you read from the Torah. And he went, oh, well, I didn't really, prepare, whatever. So they called little Shmulik, 9-year-old kids. Okay, you read. If the rabbi can't read, you read. Yeah? So really, a 9-year-old can read. Our custom is that we don't allow that, certainly not the Ashkenazim. So that's one thing which back in the day would have been no marker, but maybe the Sephardim for even longer. And the other is, when can a child start wearing tefillin? Now, the Ashkenazi minhag is very strongly that we don't let the kid wear tefillin until bar mitzvah. A couple of months before. Look at number 13, please. Katan hayodeya lishmor tefillin. If a child knows how to look after his tefillin batara properly, keep himself clean, shelo yishan, he won't fall asleep with the tefillin on, shelo yafiach behem, he won't pass wind with the tefillin on. Because it's a very serious problem. So if that's the case, and the Ramah adds, Shaloi yikanes beit lehem de beis akise, he won't go to the toilet, the bathroom with the tefillin on, then says the Shulchan Aruch, Chayiv aviv liknos lo tefillin lechancha. As soon as your little boy is able to be responsible enough that he understands what he can and can't do with the tefillin, so they can be mechanich them. 9, 10. And the Sfaradim I brought you from the Rav Avad Yosef in the footnotes, that the minhag for many Sfaradim was to give their kids tefillin at 9 or 10 if the kid's up to it. Comes along, the Raman says, V'yesh Omrim, the high cotton dafka shehu ben yod gimel. When it says cotton, it means 13. Never before. V'yomecha, 13 years old. V'chein nagu v'ein lashanus. That's our minhag, we don't change it. Okay, there are some Ashkenazim that already start a month or two before. But if you think about it, tzitzis, put tzitzis on a 4-year-old boy. Why all of a sudden tefillin we have to... It's not because intrinsically a cotton can't wear tefillin, but we don't trust the cotton, certainly not the Ashkenazim. So one of the reasons it could be that the Ashkenazim started celebrating Bar Mitzvah specifically by the 1600s, 1700s is because they had something that changed. We didn't let you lay before and now we do. We didn't let you wear tefillin before and now you do. Whereas with the Sfaradim, that wasn't necessarily the case. They did let them wear tefillin before. There could be other reasons as well, but that's maybe some of the societal background. Now, Adkan Bar Mitzvah. We'll see Rav Moshe brings it up again later. But Bat Mitzvah. Where does Bat Mitzvah come from? So the Torah doesn't talk, the Gemara doesn't talk directly about the concept of Bat Mitzvah. It does mention the word Bat Mitzvah as to whether a woman is or isn't obligated in a mitzvah. Certainly the celebration of Bat Mitzvah was unheard of until modern times. Now many people assume, this is the what people say, that the first Bat Mitzvah was Mordechai Kaplan's daughter Judith, who had a Bat Mitzvah in 1922. Actually, that's not quite the case. There were other references to Bat Mitzvah in other places, in France, in Poland, in Italy. And certainly in the 19th century, in the Reform world, the issue of confirmation ceremonies became very strongly a Jewish, copying from the Protestant confirmation. You know, all the young women go with all their white dresses and they're at the age of 15, 16, whatever, and they do, as a group, they have confirmation. So the Reform communities, many of them copied that. And from as early as 1810, the girls were introduced into this ceremony of confirmation. Actually, the girls did it more than the boys, because the boys at least had a bar mitzvah option if they were still traditional enough to do a bar mitzvah, but the girls didn't have anything, so they went into this confirmation. And actually the term bat mitzvah for the confirmation, I gave a reference here first, we see, as far as I can find, there was a famous Austrian rabbi, Adolf Jelinek, who in 1847 calls this ceremony a bat mitzvah. If you want a piece of interesting trivia, which I hope is not too much Bittel Torah, Rabbi Jelinek's son became a famous automobile producer in the early 1900s, and his daughter was called Mercedes, and he therefore called the brand of his automobiles Mercedes after his daughter, the granddaughter of Adolf Jelinek. If you find that interesting, then that's great. Okay, I did. By the 1920s, individual girls were beginning to have bat mitzvah ceremonies as well, but they didn't really call them bat mitzvah. They were basically the confirmation for an individual girl, and I brought you in the footnotes. Mordechai Kaplan actually went to Italy and witnessed one of these ceremonies, and he describes what they do. Footnote number 12 there. It started to catch on with the conservative movement in America. By the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, bat mitzvah, became quite common in the conservative world. But in the Reform and Orthodox world, for different reasons and different times, it didn't start happening really till the 50s. And by the 1950s, there were Orthodox people who were asking, well, can we make a bat mitzvah? Why can't we do a bat mitzvah? This is lovely. This is something for the girls. They don't feel that they're being discriminated against. What's wrong with it? We're not talking about them laning or anything like that, women being called up for the Torah. Just have a ceremony. You know, she can, even in the conservative shuls, the girl just read from a chumash. She didn't lane from the Torah. So what's wrong with that? Let her give a drasha, etc. Just incidentally, in Israel through the 50s, bat mitzvah started to be used to reference just the party. They didn't really have much of a religious marker for bat mitzvah at all, but the party became known as the bat mitzvah, even in the 50s. So apparently in 1960, it was well known that that was called Israel's bat mitzvah year of the state of Israel, because it was Israel was 12. I must confess that I was not born then, but if anybody here remembers the advertising for 1960, the Independence Day, maybe they can verify or not. Okay, fine. Let's get into now the main meat of what I'm talking about, which is, okay, so what do we tell an Orthodox couple who say, can my daughter have a bat mitzvah? So I want to bring you through four different responses. One from a classic Eastern European rabbi who says it's absolutely prohibited on every level. You can't do anything. And if you do anything, it's like Yarig Val Yavor. Almost literally, he says. Okay, that's one approach. Rav Aaron Valkin, we'll talk about him in a second. I want to show you Rav Moshe Feinstein, who in the 1950s, 56 and 57, has two tshuvas on the matter. And we'll see in a minute what he has to say about it. Then I want to show you Rav Avadi Yosef in the, I assume, the late 50s, 60s. His tshuva was not dated, at least I couldn't find it. But he responds to Rav Moshe. So it must be after Rav Moshe, where Rav Avadi has a completely different perspective on bat mitzvah. And then finally, a tshuva, which I think is from the 60s, of the Sridi Eish, Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, which is the main piece I want to show you today. So keeping an eye on the time, let's move forward. Number 14. B'mashe Roitzin, this is Rav Valkin. Rav Aaron Valkin was a rav in Pinsk. He was killed, he was murdered in the Holocaust. And his grandson actually was the mashkiach in the yeshiva that I attended for a number of years here at Beit Began. Rav Chaim Valkin, he's the mashkiach here today. So Rav Aaron Valkin produced a tshuva in the 1930s that says as follows. B'mashe Roitzin lahakil kehilos anashim v'nashim b'churim b'butolot l'chug chagigas habagrut l'na'arot. People want to get everyone together, have a party, celebrate majority for a girl. Oy kame isurei doraisa ikabaza. I'm going to show you that it's prohibited on a Torah level. Achrei shebevadai kol ha'osikein kavanasoi l'isdamos la'akum. People are trying to copy the non-Jews, which by the way was true in the 1800s. That's exactly why they were doing it. Or Rishay Yisrael, the evil people in the Jewish world, Harifoma, which is being copied. So again, that's true. It was copying those communities. There are seven negative mitzvahs and two positive mitzvahs. Shelo leilech b'chukoseihem, chukasagoy and non-normative practices, etc. The kol shekein l'takin davar chadash. And even worse, this is interesting, not only are you breaking nine mitzvahs d'oraisa, that's bad enough, but even worse, it's something we never did before. It's a funny way of putting it, no? You would have thought, like, okay, it's something we never did before, but it's nine mitzvahs d'oraisa? No. Kol shekein l'takin davar chadash, ha'shelo shamanu, the assault on Mesorah, that in those times was perhaps the most sensitive, because the one thing separating the Orthodox and the Conservative and Reform was Mesorah. We can't attack the Masorah. Lo shamanu shma bilti ayam. We never heard anything until now of this new thing. V'chein lo yaseh l'shanis miminhagi avoseinu. We may not change the minhagim of our parents. Afilu b'davar she'ein nidnu disa. Even if there's no possibility of avera at all. If we never did it, we mustn't do it. Kol shekein b'davar hazeh. Now he puts it the other way around as well. All the more so, actually, sur chomer ma'oid, when it's a terrible avera. Aviz ra'adaz v'avodah zorah. It's like avodah zorah. It's like it's Giloy Arias, because everyone's mixing together and they're all schmoozing and kissing and Chilul Shabbos. You can see he feels that this whole thing is disastrous. Vadai Hamatir Hazeh Hu Zaken Mamre. Any rabbi who permits this is a rebellious elder who's himself Chayv Misa back in the day. Okay, and if you support him, Harihu Kazorik Evan Lemerkulis. It's like you threw a stone to Merkulis, which is Avodah Zorah. You can't do this. V'arur umuvdil yehei me'eda Hashem. He's cursed and removed. He doesn't like it. I think we got that impression. He don't do it. Yes.
If
The problem with all tshuvas is they are specific to a case and specific to a time. That's the problem with tshuvas. The advantage of learning tshuvas is you get detailed analysis on a specific issue, which you won't find in the classic halacha books dealt with in that. But the downside is you can always ask, if he was alive today, what would he... I don't know. I suspect he would say the same thing if he was alive today, actually. Because you ask people from the Haredi community, certainly in Israel, should we celebrate a bat mitzvah? You'll get a very similar answer. This is a reform thing. It's not true? Ah, you see? Tell us. They do? Okay, so maybe Rav Arkov would say the same thing today. Or maybe he would, but no one would listen to him. Interesting. Okay, that's interesting. So bat mitzvah is even creeping into the... Okay, into the more Haredi parts of the community. We'll see, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but that is a move in that sense. Okay, on to Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe Feinstein, in America, dealing with the Americans. Rav Aaron Varkin is in Pinsk. Okay, there's a lot of reform in Pinsk, that's for sure, in Eastern Europe, and certainly Haskalah, more than reform. There's a lot of Haskalah out there. But Rav Moshe is in Manhattan. So let's see what he says. Number 15. This is his 57 tshuva. I think the right approach is Mishum de ein nika chiluk bebat lemaase b'mashe nasis gedoyla yotemi ketnuta. So there's no real public change of status for a young woman, which is true. That's just a fact. A boy can now lane. A boy can now lead the davening. A boy can now camp for a minion. A girl doesn't make that change. V'loy damin leben. It's not the same as a boy. Shenika tova, that it's very, very evident. Sheme atam mitzarfin oto lakol dava sheboi minyan. Asara, minyan shloshe, can make a zimun. Okay, Sephardim, you can even make a zimun with a younger child, but Ashkenazim don't. So the boy has a very big change of status. Va'al yediyat ba'alma, on just the realization in her mind that she's now obligated in the mitzvahs, kesheloi nikola maase, which has no practical outward implications, ain oisin suda v'simcha. We won't make a suda, we won't publicly celebrate. Meaning, I'll celebrate with the public if it affects the public. But the fact that this young woman is 12 doesn't affect the public, so I won't celebrate. There is, of course, a big simcha.
He doesn't object to a private
celebration here. No, let her celebrate with her family, let her do something nice on Shabbos. 100%. He has no problem with her celebrating in her... We'll see soon, he even goes back on that a little bit. But in public, he says no. What if she gives a drosha? It won't really help. Number 16. Afim tidrosh. Even if she gives a drosha. Leika mala. Doesn't do anything. Shepaturim in Talmud Torah. Because she's not obligated in Talmud Torah anyway. So what did I do here? What did I achieve? Okay, that's a big subject. To what extent is a woman obligated in what kinds of Talmud Torah? There are four different mitzvahs in the Torah of Talmud Torah. Some of which women are obligated the same as men, some differently to men. Not getting into that now. We will get to that another time, but Ezrat Hashem. So Rav Moshe, I would say, in this tshuva at least, is like, not negative, but he's like, don't make a big deal out of it. However, in this number 17, which is his previous tshuva, which he got some kickback over, okay, was he's much more harif, in 1956. Look at number 17. B'davar inyan ha-chafatzim l'hanhig, those people who wish to make a new custom. Eizes say the v'simcha b'benoy shenasu b'benoy mitzvah. To girls when they become bas mitzvah. Hine ein lasu ze b'bet kneset. This is, I'm being very clear. Don't do it in shul. B'shum oifen, meaning in the sanctuary. Don't make a service out of it. Af l'loy b'layla, even not at night time, meaning we'll open up the shul when nobody else is there. We'll do a thing for our family and friends. No. Don't do anything in shul. Number one, shul is not something to have a place to have private parties. Halachically, shul is for services. This is something that you kind of made up, and therefore you can't do it in the sanctuary. Okay. Even if you want to say, oh, I build a shul al tanai, that I can do kiddushes. No, you can't just do stam things which have got no connection to a mitzvah. The hat ceremony, and the ceremony, he says, shall bat mitzvah hu vaday rak divrei yushus. It's actually clearly not a mitzvah. And the hevel ba'alma. And actually it's a load of nonsense. The ain shum makom lahatil aso yiseh bebeis knesses. And you can't do a load of nonsense in the shul. The kol shekein b'zeh, and all the more so now, and he lays into it, shehamakor b'meha reform of a conservativa. The origin is reform conservative, and Rav Moshe in the 50s was fighting this. They were fighting the battles of Mechitza. They were fighting. Many people were quite happy to sit in a conservative shul. Many conservative shuls felt quite firm back in the 50s. Okay, they had family seating sometimes, not always. They had Orthodox rabbis in the conservative shuls. So he's fighting this battle. Oh, exactly your point. If the family wants to make a celebration in the house, rishai, that's okay. But don't think for a second you're making a sudas mitzvah, even in the house, which by the way has halachic implications. A sudas mitzvah, there are certain heterim on Shabbos, there are different. It's not a sudas mitzvah. Just a birthday party. No heterim for a birthday party. If I only had the strength, he says, I'd like to abolish bar mitzvah as well. If I only had the strength. Shalabanim, meaning don't think I'm getting at the girls. Oh, you can't have a public ceremony, but the boys can. I don't want anyone to do anything in shul, he says. Shiki yadua, everybody knows. Lo yehevi zeh shum ish lekirv lekarva atayra b'latayra. No individual bar mitzvah boy ever became one iota closer to Torah through the sham of the bar mitzvah, he says in the 50s. Now, again, you can ask, is this still the case? Maybe not now. There's a whole kirv mindset now. There are people who are distant from Judaism where the bar mitzvah actually is an important step to connect the family. But in the 1950s, I'm thinking of, you know, Sheldon with his, like, scarf talus and, you know, and all of the mothers and kissing everybody and fathers and in shul and hugging and everybody dressed, half-dressed. Yes. That's a separate issue, whether it's chukat hagoy to have weddings, shul. Actually, true. But the Ashkenazim will make, well, the Sephardim will make a lot of that. The Ashkenazim will make, whatever, not getting into that now. So he says, I would abolish bar mitzvahs, shalabanim, because you do a loy hevi, he says, shum ish lekarva latoyer lemitzvahs, the afloy eta bar mitzvah, not even the kid, afloy leshach, not even for 1 second. Everybody knows this is the last time you're ever going to see him. He's off. The Adar Rabbah, on the contrary, he says, the Harba Makoimis maybe is Elechil Shabbos. People break Shabbos, they drive to Shul. That's for sure the case. But Oid Isurim, other Isurim. Akopani Mashikfar Hunhag, what is now still the Minag, nevertheless. Bapeh, okay, Vagamba, Vapor rather, Vagamba Zem Imakor Mitzvah, Kasha Levata. Since Bar Mitzvah at least has some source, and it's what people have done for hundreds of years, what can I do? I can't cancel Bar Mitzvahs. No one's going to do that. But to make a new thing, but with the girls, shehu beloy makor mitzvahs klal, which has no basis in mitzvah, af bebayit vaday hayayote tov limnoa. Even in the house, he says, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't even do it at home. Af sheleke isa, even if there's no problem at all, aval asoyis bebeisa knesis, but to do it in shul, af belali, even a night, b'shasha ein mitpalim, when no one's davening, asur. Quite strong. And again, what would Rav Moshe say today? Good question. But and as I said, he got a little bit of a kickback on that as being quite a harsh tshuva. And in the 57 tshuva, he clarifies some things and he was a little bit softer. But you can see he was fighting the battles of Orthodox Jewry in North America in 1957. And bat mitzvah was not just another ceremony. What's wrong with it? It was a whole symbol of this represents the others, whatever the others are. Now we have to be a little bit careful with that, because sometimes that labeling something, oh, if you do that, you're one of them, is a dangerous thing in and of itself. If you're a woman and you make a zimun, oh, you must be a feminist, whatever that means. Okay, I'll leave aside that it's halachically completely permitted, according to the Gaon, even obligatory. We're not going to get in. Some things just become labeled, and it's a dangerous thing sometimes to label them. People always talk about the slippery slope. Well, if you allow this, next. Well, the slippery slope often goes in two directions. If you allow it, yes, there's a danger that you may end up in worse things. But if you don't allow it, there comes a point when people say, well, I'm sick of hearing no, 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 and I'm off, I'm going. So there is a slippery slope down the other side as well, not to be forgotten. Rav Avadya, after Rav Moshe says, look, I don't see what the problem is. Of course, in the Sephardi world, there really is no problem, because no one is going to join the reform. No one even knows what the reform do. And they would never step foot in a Reform synagogue or Reform temple in the Sephardi world, for the most part. So Rav Avadia, and he's in Israel where there is no Reform in the way that there is in America, even in the 50s there wasn't. So if you look at number 18, says Rav Avadia, ulefi ze nira shegam lenara shemalola shteim esre shana, a girl who has comes to 12, v'yom echad, she turns 12, u'mechayevet b'chol ha-mitzvah sha'ish ha-chayevet ba. And she obligated in all mitzvahs. Harinase mitzvah. She is. She's doing. Got to do a mitzvah now. Va'oseh ba'oseh mitzvah. Okay. She could do mitzvahs. Mitzvah. She mitzvah va'oseh. She now mitzvah va'oseh. She's obligated in all these mitzvahs that women do, which is most of the mitzvahs. Ra'oi lachog et knisatah le'mitzvah. Of course, you should celebrate that. Besudas hoida v'simcha. Make a suda. Thanks. Joy, the kaven shem b'chinat hazot ein klal hevdel bein nara nara. And since in this sense there is not one jot of difference between boys and girls, behigiyasam lechi of mitzvahs, when they come to mitzvahs, why shouldn't you do it for a girl? No difference at all. Ukiyotze b'zeh kasav hagon Rabbi Yosef Chaim, and he quotes the Ben Ish Chai, and look at what he does with the Ben Ish Chai. Very interesting in Baghdad. And he says, "B'seiv ben Ishchai, she'af al pi shaloi nagu la'asoit suda lenara b'yom hachnasal mitzvahs." Even though in Baghdad he says there was not a minag to make a suda, mikol makom roi she'tilba big day Shabbos. But there was a minag that the girl would, for that day, she wear big day Shabbos, even if it was during the week. V'tiyeh smecha, she would be very joyous. Ba'oisa hayom, ashi zachta likanes la'olam mitzvahs, meaning, even though they didn't make a suda, they did something which was clear and public. It says Rav Avadia that he quoted the Ben Ish Chai, V'nira midvarav, I can learn from the Ben Ish Chai, she'im noigim la'asot la mesiba v'seuda, that if today that for us means to make her a party and a celebration, kamo she'osim lana, like a bar mitzvah boy, la bar mitzvah, begila mitzvahs, hadava ra'uy v'hagon. It's correct. V'nechshav l'sudas mitzvah. And it is a sudas mitzvah. Now, it's interesting what he did, a little bit of nifty halachic footwork there. He brought a precedent from the Ben Ish Chai, who didn't do this. Now, he could have said the opposite. He could have said, well, the Ben Ish Chai never made a suda, and if he never made a suda, then that's not our Masorah, we shouldn't make a suda. And he actually does the opposite. He said, the Ben Ish Chai, in the context of his society, did what he did, which was, she wore Shabbos clothes and she was happy and joyous. So whatever that for us is the equivalent, so we can do that. It's a very different meta-halachic perspective on Masorah than the one that Rav Moshe Feinstein and we saw Rav Valkin is saying. And therefore he says it's a Sudas Mitzvah, there's nothing to talk about, and it's completely permitted. But again, he's not dealing with Reform. Yes?
Girls were getting married in Iraq and Iran at the age of 12, 13.
Right, also. The boys also, by the way. Rav Shmuel Salant had his wedding on his bar mitzvah. Very cost effective, by the way. Okay. So anyway, let's go on. Let's look at number 90. So the main story in the last 8 minutes... Again, that clock is still four. Now it's 4 minutes fast, 3 minutes fast. Okay, fine. I know people are very macrid on timing, but don't get antsy when the clock reaches 15 because it's not true. It's now, I make it 11:06, something like that. Fine. Okay, fine. Let's look at Rav Weinberg. Now, who was Rav Weinberg? You could speak for an hour about Rav Weinberg, and I strongly suggest that you should read Mark Shapiro's book, Between Orthodoxy and the Yeshiva World, I think it's called that, on the life of Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. It's a fantastic book. You can pick it up. It's a thin book. You can read it in one Shabbos, about the life of Rav Weinberg, who, of course, grew up in Eastern Europe, in the classic Yeshiva setting of Eastern Europe, but then moved to Berlin in the 1920s, and then faced the very different world of Western European Orthodoxy, modeled on Rav Hirsch, etc. And he says, wow, this is a whole different world. And he talks about the fact that the women sing during Zmiras, and I never heard this in Eastern Europe. And he, therefore, is a bridge between Eastern Europe and Western Europe, and also between the pre-Holocaust and the post-Holocaust world. Unusually, and almost uniquely, this was a Rav who survived the Holocaust and stayed in Europe. He survived the Holocaust for all sorts of different nisim, but one of the reasons he had a Soviet passport, because he was a Russian citizen. And when he was captured by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, instead of turning into a death camp, they sent him to a work camp because they wanted to swap him as a Soviet citizen for Russian prisoners of war. So his health was irretrievably damaged by the awful things he experienced in the war, but he survived, and he stayed in Switzerland. And there are many people who he died before I was born and when I was very little, but there are many people who remember Rav Weinberg, the Shridi Eish, who grew up with him and knew him. Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. Weinberg. Okay, Weinberg. Look at number 19. Says Rav Weinberg, let's get into this now. Yesh kainim neged ahetzer shel chagigas habat mitzvah. I know there are people who claim it's wrong. They campaign against, Orthodox people campaign against bat mitzvah. Mishum shehu neged minhag adoyres hakodmim. It's against our previous minhagim. Shaloi nagu minhagse. We never did it before. That's the key. We never did it before. Whatever's right or wrong with it, we never did it before. Aval be'emes ein zotana. I don't agree with that claim. Just because we never did it before, don't tell me that's a reason not to do it. Ki b'dorei shelefaneinu lo hitzdarchu la'asok b'chinuch habanot. There was less need to focus on women's education in the 19th century. Even though Rav Hirsch, even in the 19th century in Western Europe, did focus on women's education. Sarah Schneer was not the first. Sarah Schneer brought it to Eastern Europe. But she was inspired by a shiur given by Rabbi Flesch, who was one of Rav Hirsch's Talmidim, who'd established girls' schools in Western Europe. Okay, but he said before that they didn't need the same education. Jewish people grew up in a much more wholesome religious environment. Maybe a little bit nostalgic. Not everything was quite as rosy as this. But back in the day, there was less pressures of assimilation. People grew up in an atmosphere of religious positivity. And girls who grew up in a Jewish home, they just absorbed it into themselves. But Ephraim Mar said, we didn't need to do anything. They nursed Judaism from their mother's breast and they just had it with them. Aval, achshav nishtanu adoyres shinui otzam. Everything is completely different now. Don't tell me we should do what we did 100 years ago. Hashpat ha-rachov, the influence of the outside world, the street, he says, o keret milev kol navanara, it uproots from every boy and girl, kol zik shal yadot, any connection with Judaism. V'habanot mitchanchot v'bati sefer nochrim, the girls are educated, more than the boys even, in non-Jewish schools, in gymnasia, or v'beit sefer chilonim, or in chiloni schools. This was the case earlier in the 20th century, when the boys were going to classic yeshivas, but the girls were going to non-Jewish schools, being educated in chemistry and doctorates. And of course they walked away from Judaism. Why should you treat me like a three-year-old when I have a degree and a master's, etc.? She'enem shaykdim la'ashrish b'leiv tamideim. They do not have it rooted within them. Okay, ahavas Torah l'Yisrael, the love of Jewish Torah, min hagia kodesh shel hayadut hashleima of authentic Judaism. Achshav mutal aleinu lirakez et kol kochotenu. We have to gather all our strength. B'chinuchan shalabanot. The call of our age is women's education, he says. Interesting. He wasn't the only one. Rav Zalman Sirotskin, at a similar time, quoted the line in the Gemara: Kol hamalamed et bitay Torah ki ilu malamda tiflut. Anyone who teaches his daughter Torah, if he taught her nonsense. And he says now, Kol she'einu malamed bito Torah ki ilu malamda tiflut. And Rav Zalman Sirotsky was not coming from a left-wing background. He said it has to change. It pains us to see this. In general chinuch, limudei safot, in languages, safrut, in literature, chilonut, in secular literature, umade hatever, in science, ruach do'eged libanot, are we concerned about the girls, kamal labanim, they get the same treatment. But in religious education, limudei Tanakh, safrut hamusa shel Chazal, chinuch lemitzvos, maasiyos she'anoshim chayavos behem. But in all of these Jewish, very important Jewish educational aspects, maznichin lagamra, we just abandon them. We don't focus on them. We don't look to what they need. La'ashreinu, thank God, he says, gedoyla u'makifa shel, like ashreinu gedoyla makifa, we have a very thankful, I missed a line. La'ashreinu amdu gedoyli Yisrael b'dor hakodem, thank God the generations, in the last generation, the great gedolim got up, ala kilkula zot, on this terrible destruction, v'tiknu moistah shel ha'tayra v'chizag the dati ba'ad b'nois Yisrael. And they set up Jewish schools for the girls. Hakamat reshet gedoyla u'makifa shel beis Yaakov. The Beit Yaakov movement, which is comprehensive and deep, he hafgana hane'ederet biyoter shel doreinu, is one of the greatest demonstrations of the strength of our. We'll be finished in just a minute. Just if there's a call coming through. Okay. Now, Common sense, he says, pedagogy, and basic pedagogy, it obligates us. We have to celebrate with the girls. It's not even an option anymore. To make this distinction, discrimination, between boys and girls, celebrating their majority, it's so hurtful to young women. They see their brothers being celebrated and they're just ignored. Whoa, he's really going for it now. Women are emancipated, women are equal, and if they see their brothers celebrating and they're just left, can't do that. I'm going to allow bat mitzvah. I agree with Moshe. Not in the shul. Even at night. Even though there are no people there. Do it in a private house. Or in the shul hall. And then he gives some tanaim there. Let's skip to the next paragraph. Underlined. Ulema'asa. In practical terms. Hadavar talui bekavanat harutzim. This is the key line. This is the takeaway line from the shir. Everything depends. If you're trying to do something new, which is halachically permitted but new, why are you doing it? What is your kavana? Lechadesh minagzeh, to start any new minag, shall chagidas bar mitzvah, hear about mitzvah. Im hei mitkavnin l'shem mitzvah, are you trying to do it like I said because the girls need it, l'shem mitzvah? Or chalila l'shem chikui haminim, or you're just trying to copy non-Jews, non-observant Jews, etc. Everything depends on kavana. It's not lost on me, he says. Many of the people who are God-fearing and they prohibit and they say no. They say no to so many things. But they know, they don't pay any attention. They're not even logical anymore when it comes to changing minhagim. I understand that. They sometimes not even halachic. They say no, 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 we can't change. No, no, no. They just rule emotionally on that. I get that. Haleva Yehudi, okay, Adavak Masorit Horim Umorim, the Jewish heart which is so connected to our Masorah, Nirtami Kol Shinu Shehu Benoig Hadati. I understand we don't like making any change. It's been bad for us. Ulam Ein Lahem Nishkach, but these people must never forget. Kigam hamitzdadim beheta. Even those who say it is allowed, shall minak chadash zet, so this new minak, shall chagigas about mitzvah, libam doifeg becharad lechizuk chinuch hadati shel benot Yisrael. They're not just trying to copy reform. They're trying to make sure that these young girls feel valued and enfranchised within the Jewish religion. Shebe nesiva shalachayim bedor hazeh heim zikukut beyote lechisun. They need more than anyone this injection, ruchani, this spiritual injection, leidud musari, and this encouragement, this ethical encouragement, vehigayan legil hamitzvot, when they reach this age. This is a really important tshuva. Not just in bat mitzvah, but in many, 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 many things. Because he says, you've got to weigh this up. Don't just talk about, as I said, the slippery slope in that direction. Think about what saying no to everything is going to do. You have to say yes when it's the right thing to do. And therefore, I leave you with those different approaches to think about and apply to other situations within Judaism. Oh, good question. What bar mitzvah celebration? I'll tell you, we'll talk about that afterwards. We did a celebration, but not in shul. We did something in Kiddush Lavi, in Kibbutz Lavi. My daughter gave a little drasha. It was very... Kibbutz Lavi. No, in we went away. We took people away for a weekend. It was Yom HaTzmod as well. My daughter was born on Yom HaTzmod, so we combined the two. Which anyway, people would have said it was awesome to celebrate Yom HaTzmod, but okay, fine. That's not for now.